This time of year, we find ourselves saying and singing words that normally wouldn't cross our lips. We tell each other to be merry and sing sentimentally about the Yule log. It's Talk of Iowa from Iowa Public Radio. I'm Charity Nebbe. My guest today is English language expert Patricia O'Connor. She's here to help us decode some of the old-fashioned language that enters our lexicon during the holiday season. We'll start off with the controversial abbreviation Xmas. It's not just for advertising sales. We'll talk about the history of that abbreviation. We'll also explore the origins of other words like Yule, Wassail, and try to make sense of the most confusing holiday song there is, Auld Lang Syne. We'd also like to hear from you. What holiday words are your favorites or cause confusion in your household? Please join our conversation after the news. It's Talk of Iowa from Iowa Public Radio. I'm Charity Nebbe. My guest today is English language expert Patricia O'Connor. She's author of Origins of the Specious, which recently came out in paperback, and many other entertaining and enlightening books about our language. Today, we're going to spend the hour decoding some of the language of the holiday season, and we would love to hear from you as well. What holiday words are your favorites, or maybe what words cause confusion in your house? I found myself the other night trying to explain what Auld Lang Syne means to a five-year-old, and I failed miserably, so we'll get to that one later this hour, but we'd love to hear from you. 866-780-9100. You can tweet us at IPR Talk. You can also send email to talkofiowa@iowapublicradio.org. Hello, Pat.
Hi, how are you?
I'm very good. How are you?
Fine.
Great. I want to start today with Xmas, because, of course, that's something that we see all over the place. It's
yes.
on signs for Xmas trees, Xmas sale, and it's commonly used as an abbreviation for Christmas. Some mm-hmm. people really don't like that, but it's not a recent invention.
No, but, you know, every year just about I get email asking about this usage, and some people seem to see it as an attempt to secularize Christmas. You take the Christ out of Christmas by replacing it with an X, or Xing out Christ, that sort of thing. Well, nothing really could be further from the truth. The etymology of this is quite interesting. The word Christ, just the noun Christ, was originally pronounced Christ, and it was spelled C-R-I-F-T when it first entered English, in Old English, and it comes from the Greek Christ, which means, or Christos, which means the anointed. And in Greek, the word begins with a K sound and an R sound. But in Greek, these are written as what look to us like X and P. These are the Greek letters chi and rho, X, P. And so the word Christos in Greek started with XP. Now, when monks in medieval England began translating manuscripts, sacred manuscripts from Greek into Old English, they typically used the X since it was the first letter of the word Christ, as it was then. They used that X as an abbreviation. And often in old manuscripts, you would come across things like the word Christ abbreviated as X or XP. And in words like christen or christened or Christian or Christianity, you would find X or XP at the beginning. For instance, Christian might be spelled X-T-I-A-N. Or X-P-I-A-N, meaning Christian. And also, when Christmas came along, which wasn't until the 12th century, by the way, X-P-M-A-S, or X-M-A-S, was used for an abbreviation for Christmas. So that's how the tradition began. It began with monks in England translating Greek manuscripts into Old English and using X or XP as the Greek letters, as an abbreviation.
Now, I have a hard time believing that the people who put it up on signs to tell you how long a sale is think
no,
back
they don't,
to that.
No, they don't know all that. They probably think it's just a handy abbreviation. I don't know. But the truth is that all these words have evolved. They weren't always the way they are now. In fact, Christmas wasn't always called Christmas. It wasn't called Christmas until the 12th century, and before then it was called Yule. Now, as you probably know, Yule is a word that for a festival that had been used from pre-Christian times. The name originated as a midwinter pagan festival celebrated in Northern Europe before the days of Christ. And it's been speculated that it may be related to the Roman festival of Saturnalis. In Old Norse, the word was Yol, roughly looks like J-O-L. And a similar word was used as the name of the month December or January. And one meaning of the Norse god Odin was Jolner, Yule figure. And some etymologists have suggested that the word jolly ultimately comes from the Old Norse word Yol, which is related to Yule.
Oh, that's fascinating. The you mentioned earlier, though, that Christ was originally pronounced Christ.
Yes, so it was pronounced Chris, and it was written C-R-I-S-T for centuries. Now, that's another interesting story, because I had always wondered this myself. Why do we say Christmas and not Christmas? And, of course, I didn't know why until I researched it, but it's quite interesting. In Old and Middle English, the name was Christ, meaning the anointed one from the Greek word, and the CH spelling didn't become standard until about 1500. And the vowel was short, like the I in mist, for many centuries, and it's unclear why the I began to be lengthened, but for some reason, Irish missionaries in England in the 600s and 700s encouraged the long I pronunciation, as in the German Heist. So we don't know why those missionaries encouraged that pronunciation, but it did catch on. And German, by the way, retains the old short I pronunciation. The name Kris Kringle, for example, comes from the German Christkindl, which is German for Christ child. And in German, the name Christ sounds like Chris with a T at the end.
And why do you think that if the missionaries were encouraging English speakers to say Christ, why then Christmas didn't also get changed?
Yes. Well, it may be that it's just easier to say Christmas than Christmas. I don't know why, but it's not unusual that in English a word will split off and have a different pronunciation in one form than it does in another. This is known sometimes.
You mentioned that Christmas didn't start getting celebrated until the 12th century, and it got rolled into this midwinter celebration that already existed, the Yule celebration.
Mm-hmm.
Do you know how long it took for Christmas to catch on?
I don't. I'm sure there are historians of Christmas that can answer that question, but I don't know that Christmas wasn't actually celebrated until the 12th century. I just know that it wasn't called Christmas until the 12th century. There were Yule celebrations in Northern Europe from the time of the Romans, and in Scandinavian times from pre-Roman times. So there were always midwinter festivals that were celebrated in Europe, and they seem to all roll into a big ball, which again is not unknown. So Yule became rolled into Christmas, and now we think of Yule as merely a vocabulary word that goes along with the Christmas season.
Well, let's talk more about Yule, because, of course, there are other ways that we hear it. We hear, you already mentioned the Yule log, which I would guess was a log that was burned during this winter celebration.
Right.
We also hear Yule tide.
Yes, tide is another word for time. So Yuletide means Yule time.
Okay.
Right.
So we're supposed to make that happy. We know that.
Right.
We know that from all of the songs that we sing.
Right, right.
If you have any Christmas words that you'd like to talk about, give us a call at 866-780-9100. Tweet us at IPR Talk. Send email to talkofiowa@iowapublicradio.org. Christmas words or holiday words, we are going to move on to New Year's eventually this hour, but we'd love to hear from you. Again, that number is 866-780-9100. 866-780-9100. And I suppose words like Yule get passed along because they work well in rhyme.
Yes, exactly. They do. Which is probably why it's not still pronounced Yule, for all I know. I'm just speculating. But you may notice that there's sort of a Nordic flavor to some of these words. And another one is wassail. This is a word, it's spelled W-A-S-S-A-I-L. We hear it only during the Christmas season. And it's basically an ancient toast. And it comes from, it's a combination of two words, was, which means be. I should explain that in Old English, our word for to be had three forms, was, am, and be. And they were all rolled into one, and some became the past tenses and whatnot. But it was was, which meant be, and heil, which meant health or healthy. So heil being an Old Norse term for health. And so was heil meant to your health or be healthy. So it was a toast, a drinking toast. And a lot of these Yule festivals, of course, involve drinking. And eventually the word wassail became a name for a hot drink made with wine or beer mulled together with spices and traditionally served at Christmas.
Well, that's what I had already always heard, that it was a drink. So
yes, yes.
That just evolved over time.
Right. Originally it was just a toast for drinking anything.
I'm talking with Patricia O'Connor, English language expert. She's author of Origins of the Species and many other books, and we're talking about holiday words. Please join our conversation at 866-780-9100, tweet us at IPR Talk, or send email to talkofiowa@iowapublicradio.org. This is Talk of Iowa.
He's gonna have a bag of crazy toys to give the corners of the girls and boys all day. Santa comes on big. You come a-calling when the snow's the most, when all your cats are sleeping warm as toast. And you gonna flip when old Saint Nick lays a lick on a peppermint stick. You come a-flying from a higher place, you fill the stocking by the fireplace. So you have a Yule that's good.
It's Talk of Iowa from Iowa Public Radio. I'm Charity Nebbe, and my guest today, I almost said gift. I guess I have holiday words on the brain. My guest today is Patricia O'Connor. She's an English language expert, our word maven. She's also the author of a number of books about the English language, including Origins of the Species, which recently came out in paperback. And we would love to hear from you with some of the holiday words that you are confused by, that you love, that you'd like to work into your everyday language the rest of the year, or if you have some words that have caused confusion in your household. I know a lot of people have funny stories about that. We'd love to hear it. 866-780-9100. Tweet us at IPR Talk, or send email to talkofiowa@iowapublicradio.org. And next up, we've got Bobby in Iowa City. Hello, Bobby.
Hello.
Hi, what would you like to talk about?
I wanted to give you my favorite word.
Okay, what is it?
Actually, I have two. I told your screener one, but I have two.
All right.
The first one is Noel, and I just love the way it sounds. I think it's very musical, and music is a great part of what I love about Christmas. And the other is joy. And I think we all need more joy in our lives every day. So I think at Christmas time we ought to think about pretty sounds and the feeling of joy.
All right, Bobby, thank you so much for calling. And Noel is another one of those words that you hear a lot in Christmas carols, the first Noel. Mm-hmm. And what's the origin of that, Pat?
Well, Noel entered English about the late 1300s, and it was another word for the Feast of Christmas, and it was used in a work called Sir Gawain and the Green Knight, and that's where it first appeared in English, and it was a cry of joy at the birth of Christ, especially in carols having to do with the Annunciation and the Nativity. And in Chaucer's Canterbury Tales, it was also used in the surname Noel showed up, and it was borrowed from the old French Noël, which meant the Christmas season, which was a variant of an earlier word, Nael, which comes from the Latin Natalis, natal, in reference especially to the natal day of Christ, the birthday of Christ.
So
that's where that comes from.
So, Bobby, knowing the history behind Noel, will that change how you hear it?
Probably not.
Probably not, because I did know a little bit about the origins of the word. Not certainly what your expert has, but I just still think it's one. It just sounds so pretty.
It does sound so pretty. We actually had a cat named Noel when I was a little girl, because we found her on Christmas Eve.
Right, well, that's a good name.
Yeah.
Now, you also mentioned joy,
yes.
Which comes from French. It's borrowed directly from French, and it entered English before 1200. So we got it from Old French, joie.
I remember that.
Right, and the French got it from Latin. And the Latins got it from a Greek word meaning to rejoice. So
Okay. That's
the history of that. So it's related to rejoicing.
We need more of that.
Yeah. We certainly do. Bobby, thank you so much for your call.
Thank you for the opportunity.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye. If you'd like to join our conversation, give us a call at 866-780-9100. You can tweet us at IPR Talk. You can also send email to talkofiowa@iowapublicradio.org. And we did get a call, and they couldn't stay on the line, and I'm not sure this is in your area of expertise, Pat, because this is not so much a word but a story, but you seem to know everything, so I'll pass it along anyway. This is from somebody who called from Prairieburg. They want to know the origin of King Wenceslas.
Oh, well, that I happen to know, not because I automatically know everything, but because I looked it up, knowing I was going to be on Talk of Iowa. St. Wenceslas was a 10th century nobleman. He was a duke in what was then Bohemia, and he was a Christian. His father was Christian, and his mother was pagan and later converted. But this was a time when that part of Europe was about half and half. I mean, there were Christians, but there were also still a lot of what, I guess, I don't like using the word pagan, but pre-Christians, too. And so there was a lot of fighting, and St. Wenceslas actually died in a... he was killed by his pagan brother. So he died for religious reasons, and he was later sainted. But he's now a patron saint of the Czech state, one of the patron saints of the Czech state. So that's his story.
And did he historically help the poor?
Yes, he did. He believed that one should use one's wealth, or with the goods that you have, that you should share them with those less fortunate.
If you'd like to join our conversation, the number to call is 866-780-9100. You can also send email to talkofiowa@iowapublicradio.org or tweet us at IPR Talk. And yesterday around here, we were talking about all of the things that we hear in Christmas carols that aren't really explained. And one of them is Parson Brown. You can do the job when you're in town in Winter
right.
Wonderland. What is that about?
Well, in some small American towns, in the 18th and 19th centuries, they were too small to have their own ministers. So there were traveling itinerant ministers who went from small rural towns performing whatever, giving services or baptizing children or marrying people, doing whatever a little ceremonies that needed to be done by a minister, by people who didn't have their own minister. And so a Parson Brown was sort of a humorous name for a circuit-traveling country parson. So the song lyric is, in the meadow we can build a snowman, then pretend that he is Parson Brown. He'll say, are you married? We'll say, no, man, but you can do the job when you're in town. So that's a reference to the itinerant traveling preacher.
Okay, and that was sort of like their Parson Smith. It was a generic name.
Right. Winter Wonderland is a song.
And that was written a long time ago. That was in 1934?
1934. The lyrics were by a man named Richard B. Smith. And interestingly, a lot of people later in the 50s, which was a weird time politically and morally, the early 50s, some people got it into their heads that it wasn't quite right for children to hear this lyric. You know, here are two people who are unmarried hanging out together and talking about they'll get married when the parson comes around. And they thought this was not seemly, not a seemly kind of Christmas song for little kids to be singing. So they changed the lyrics to, in the meadow we can build a snowman and pretend that he's a clown.
I thought that was just another verse. I had no idea.
No, it was those were the whitewashed lyrics of the 50s.
It's a very dirty song.
Right. It's been recorded that way too, but those aren't the original lyrics.
All right. I had no idea. That's a great story. If you'd like to join the conversation, give us a call at 866-780-9100, tweet us at IPR Talk, or send email to talkofiowa@iowapublicradio.org. And Bob from Ames sent us an email, and he wants to know about eggnog. I know what an egg is, but what about nog?
Oh, nog. Gee, that's a good question. I don't know. Wait, let me see. I have an etymology book here right in front of me. Let me look up nog. I'm not sure it's going to be in here. I think it's a generic term for some sort of drink. Not in here. Let me try the dictionary. I think that's what it is, but let me just...
Maybe actually just a slang word.
It could be, but I think it might be sort of like grog or ale, those things that are sort of all round. Here it is, nog. It just says another word for eggnog. So I guess,
maybe that's the origin of the word. Someone made it up.
Yeah, maybe it's short for eggnog. So here we go. Eggnog, a drink consisting of milk or cream, sugar, and eggs beaten together. Oh, here it is. It's a combination of egg plus nog, an old word for ale.
Okay.
So there you go. It's like egg ale. Ick.
that sounds much worse.
Eggnog sounds better.
Absolutely, and maybe that's why we have that word today. Bob,
and
thank you
so
much.
So fattening. That's why we gain 10 pounds over Christmas time.
I can
eggnog,
think of a few other
have
reasons,
about
too.
8,000 calories a glass.
That's probably true. If you'd like to join our conversation, you too can send an email to talkofiowa@iowapublicradio.org. You can also tweet us at IPR Talk. We have a conversation going on Facebook, and you can send us or you can call us at 866-780-9100. Well, let's talk about my son's favorite Christmas carol right now is Jingle Bells. So I've hearing that nonstop. He doesn't know all the lyrics, but he gets the idea across. And there's the lyric in there, Bells on Bobtails.
Right. A lot of people think that the bells refers to a horse named Bobtail, or a horse named Bob and the bells are on his tail or something. But actually, a bobtail is a word for a horse that's tail is docked or bobbed or cut short. And often carriage horses had their tails bobbed so that the long hair wouldn't whip back and get caught in the reins or fly in the face of the person driving the carriage. So the horses often had their tails bobbed when they were used for pulling carriages. And bobtails are horses with bobbed tails. And in the term jingle bells, the bobtails, the horses, are wearing bells. That's a very old song.
What's the date on that one?
About 1850. It wasn't published right away, but it was written about 1850 by a man named James Pierpont in Massachusetts, and it was actually written for Thanksgiving, not Christmas. But it sort of hung on and attached itself to the Christmas season. And the title "Jingle Bells," by the way, it, "jingle" isn't being used as an adjective. It was originally meant as an imperative, like as in "jingle you bells," you know, an imperative verb. So it wasn't intended to be a noun phrase.
Well, it's certainly the way we understand it now. It also doesn't, I'm not a horse person, but tying bells to a horse's tail doesn't sound like a very nice thing to do.
No, the bells weren't tied to the tail. They were usually attached to the harness.
Okay. So they were referring to the horse as a bobtail horse.
The horse as a bobtail, and the horse was wearing bells on its harness, no, probably.
Well, that helps me out a lot. I feel much better about it now. We got an email from Molly. She says, I'm not sure how to spell it, but I'm guessing that creche is part of a nativity scene, like the stable, I guess. What is a creche, and where does that word come from?
A creche, my understanding, and I'm checking my dictionary as I speak, is a French word for a crib. But let me just verify that before I don't like to say anything off the top of my head. Here it is. Creche, yeah. From the Old French creche or crib, which actually we got it from Old French, but it came of Germanic origin before that. And the wider application of the word now, a creche means a representation of the whole nativity scene with figurines and statuettes and whatnot.
That seems like a strange usage.
Yeah, crib. And I don't know if the French use it that way.
When I look at a nativity scene, I don't think that.
Yeah. You don't think that when you see a nativity scene?
No, I don't think that's Jesus' crib.
Yeah, I'm probably mispronounced. It's probably creche.
Don't know.
Creche.
It sounds like an MTV show when you think about it that way.
Right. You know, you mentioned gift earlier. When you said our gift today is instead of our guest today,
right,
because you were thinking of gifts, that reminds me of another usage that's come along in the last few years. The use of the word gift as a verb, meaning to endow someone with a gift, as in I'm going to gift my son with an Xbox for Christmas, to gift someone. And I get complaints about this sometimes. People say this is an outrage, this use of gift as a verb. And in fact, it's a revival of a very old term. It first occurred in the 16th century in a ballad, and it was also used in The Taming of the Shrew, Shakespeare's Taming of the Shrew. There's a line, I don't have that line, but the line from the earlier ballad was, the friends that were together met, and he gifted them richly with right good speed. So that use of the word gift was around for a long while, and it petered out sometime in the 19th century. And then it was revived again very recently. So sometimes when we condemn what we think is a new usage, it turns out to be a revival of a very old one. And it may have happened independently. It probably did. Nobody sat down and said, hey, why don't we use this old verb gift anymore? it just spontaneously arose again as it did the first time around.
But Shakespeare is smiling, is what you're
yes.
saying.
Yes, he probably feels justified now.
You can join our conversation, and we're talking about Christmas words or holiday words, but if you have any other questions about language that have been troubling you lately, if you've been annoyed by people using verbs as nouns and nouns as verbs, give us a call at 866-780-9100, tweet us at IPR Talk, or send an email to talkofiowa@iowapublicradio.org. And something that we hear all the time, of course, people go around and say Merry Christmas, and I know that that's kind of an Americanism. In England, you would be much more likely to hear Happy Christmas.
Mm-hmm.
Do you know why there's the difference?
I don't. But what has happened a lot of times that accounts for differences between American and British usage is that American usage sometimes preserves an older tradition. This is so common, I can't tell you. So many terms that are common in American English fell out of use at some point in British usage. It wasn't that they never were used in Britain. For instance, the use of apartment to mean a suite of rooms that you live in. Apartment was a common term in Britain, and it fell out of use in the 19th century, and they started using the term flat. Well, now a lot of British people consider the word apartment an Americanism, but in fact it's a preservation of an earlier British usage. And I just wonder if Merry Christmas instead of Happy Christmas might have been a term in colonial days that was preserved over here while they changed in Britain.
Interesting. My guest today is Patricia O'Connor. She is an English language expert, author recently of Origins of the Species, which came out in paperback not long ago. And she's answering questions about holiday words or, of course, any other terms, words, language usage you are concerned about these days. Give us a call at 866-780-9100. Tweet us at IPR Talk or send email to talkofiowa@iowapublicradio.org. This is Talk of Iowa.
It's white. Go it while you're young. Take the girls tonight and sing this slaying song. Just get a bobtail nag, 240 for his feet.
It's Talk of Iowa from Iowa Public Radio. I'm Charity Nebbe, here today with Patricia O'Connor, our word maven. She's the author of many books about the English language, and she also runs the website, grammarphobia.com, where you can find her daily musings about the English language. And Patricia, we have a call from Joe, who's on the road somewhere with a comment about Merry versus Happy. Hello, Joe.
Hi there. Good morning.
Hi.
Just a possibility on why we might say Merry Christmas, or to get your take on it. I do know this part for a fact because I studied it a few years back. The song that says, God rest ye merry gentlemen, let nothing you dismay. The original meaning for that is God make you mighty gentlemen so that nothing bring you down or get you discouraged. So in that usage, when we say word merry is the same as mighty, we very well could be saying mighty Christmas instead of Merry Christmas.
Oh, that's interesting. Thanks, Joe. I'm going to let you go because your phone is breaking up a little bit. Were you able to understand that, Pat?
Yes. I don't know. I'm a little doubtful that the Merry Christmas comes from that, because the word merry to mean happy, I'm sure, predates that hymn or that song, God Rest Ye Merry Gentlemen. So, and it meant merry as in happy for hundreds of years before that song was written. So it may be that the lyrics of the song were altered to make it happier. I don't know.
All right. Bruce is on the line in Davenport with a question about a completely different holiday. Hello, Bruce.
Hello.
Hi, what's your question?
Oh, sure. I've read into Halloween's history, and I found there's a lot of misunderstanding, and some of it's intentional, about sort of its origin. And it sits on a previous holiday called Samhain, you know, like Yule. But the one thing I thought was interesting is that the pagan holidays, the more important ones, were the mid-season holidays, not the equinox.
Holidays. They started in November. They actually started in November.
Okay.
Yeah, originally. So they were mid-season rather than end of season.
And I guess I don't know as much about Yule, which I find is really interesting. Is there sort of a plot to undermine associations with Yule as there is with Samhain?
I don't know that there's any plot to do anything. I think these plots are largely imaginary. A plot to undermine Yule?
So I think he's asking if there was a actual movement to try to disconnect this Christmas holiday from the traditional...
From the pagan?
Right.
I don't know. I think that a lot of times traditionalists, people who think of themselves as traditionalists, don't entirely understand the real tradition. So I hate to pin any motives on people in a sweeping way, but I know that there was a few years ago we used to hear a lot about the war on Christmas, and supposedly people were setting out to secularize Christmas. I think that's imaginary. You know, Glenn Beck and people like that were objecting to talking about the pagan celebrations in the same breath as the Christian celebrations. And please, it's all history, and the more we know about it, the better.
Well, that's probably an entirely different show altogether.
Yes.
But certainly the history is long, whichever holiday you're talking about. We have a call from Jean in Solon. Hello, Jean.
Hi. Don't mean to change the subject, but a few minutes ago you referred to words petering out. Can mm-hmm. you give the origin of the term to peter out?
That's a new one. Nobody's ever asked me that before. Let me see. You know, I have the American Heritage Dictionary here in front of me, and it's amazing the things that you find in it that you wouldn't expect. Let me see. Peter, to diminish slowly and come to an end or dwindle, often used with the preposition out, as in their enthusiasm slowly began to peter out. Origin unknown. So that's the fact with a lot of expressions. We don't really know their origins, but it must have passed into legitimacy and no longer be slang because it's listed as standard English now.
Okay, thank you.
Thanks for asking the question, Jean.
Bye-bye.
Bye. Thanks a lot for your call. If you have any questions or comments about holiday terminology or any other language that you've been wondering about, give us a call at 866-780-9100. Skywater Woman is on the line from Mount Pleasant. Hello.
Yes, hello. I wanted to share that I like the word gifted.
Uh-huh.
Within the Native American people, when... a person is going to gift somebody that they are honoring, mm-hmm. Or they want to share something. And when after that person has received it and they're in the company of other people, because it will be a notable gift, and that person who was given the gift will share with other people saying, I was gifted this from so-and-so. So mm-hmm. it is definitely a verb in mm-hmm. the Native American honoring of somebody.
Right. Well, see, there, in that respect, the Native American usage of gift is in line with the usage in 16th century English.
Yes.
So they both arrived at that. They arrived at it, obviously, independently.
Yes.
It's been renewed now in mainstream American English, and it's very interesting to know that it's been in use in American Indian, Native American usage. Thank you for that.
Probably before that, too.
Yeah.
Probably. Thank you so much for your call.
Yes. Thank you. Bye.
Bye-bye. Before we run out of time, I want to talk about Auld Lang Syne, because I do think that's the most confusing holiday song that we hear. And, of course, it is traditional on New Year's Eve to sing along to the lyrics
right.
that very few people actually understand.
So yes.
What does that mean?
Well, Auld, the spelling A-U-L-D, is it's a Scottish, in Scottish dialect, it means old. And Auld Lang Syne means more or less what we would mean by for old time's sake. It means time long gone. So it's a nostalgic term. It's often used as a toast to old time, for old time's sake. So it means time long gone. And it's Scottish dialect.
Okay. And I think that what we find confusing, of course, about the song is the construction. Should old acquaintance be forgotten, never brought to mind? Should old acquaintance be forgot and old lang syne?
Right.
So,
but old means old, and auld lang syne means, literally, it means all old long since.
And so it's a rhetorical question that
right.
we're being asked, and the answer is no, we should not be forgetting.
Should they be forgotten? No. It means time. It means old, long since.
Okay.
Literally, in other words, time's gone. Time's gone by.
So my trick will be to explain to my 5-year-old what rhetorical question means. That'll be my next challenge.
Right. A question that's not a question, as in, what do you mean by that?
Right. All right. Millie is on the line from Wesley. Hello, Millie.
Yes. When I was a kid growing up, I lived on a farm, and we had a corn crib. And so I looked up crib, and you know, it's not only a child's bed, but it's also a small building, or mm-hmm. it could even be a cottage or a room mm-hmm. or something. So that way, if you think of crib that way, I don't always put a building up when I put up my crèche.
Yeah, the crèche in your nativity, the crèche as in a nativity scene, the crèche meant crib in French. So it actually does come from the name for the crib. But so it's actually the crib in a nativity scene is only part of the scene. Mm-hmm. But you're right that the word crib has a much wider application in English, and it can mean a manger, as in the crib. Mm-hmm. And you know, Christ was laid in a manger, and a manger is actually a storage place for hay in a stable or an outbuilding where animals are kept. But the sense of a child's bed came along afterwards. First it was a manger, and then later the bed. And also, crib is used to mean a building for storing grain.
Mm-hmm.
Well, Millie, thank you so much for your call.
Mm-hmm.
That
thank
certainly
you.
Gives us another way to think about it. And we had another contribution from Kay in Ames, who says, from my English dictionary, crèche is a public day nursery for infants whose mothers are at work, or a foundling
hospital.
Well, that's
the meaning in Great Britain. A crèche in Great Britain is a day nursery, a place where you could, like a daycare center. But that's not an American usage. That's in British English.
Okay.
But that, she must have a British dictionary.
Yeah, well, that's what it says from my English dictionary, English
oh, yes,
with a capital
yes.
E. So, There's another word that I wonder about this time of year. And, of course, with other songs throughout the year, we always call them songs. We know about the word hymn. But why do we call them Christmas carols?
Oh, carol. That's an interesting term. I think to carol is to sing. But let me look up the derivation of that word. I don't know whether the verb or the noun came first. Let me see. Carol. A carol. The noun came first. From the Old French, carole, probably an alteration of the Latin, corolla, something that accompanied a choral dance. Actually, corolla was a person who accompanied a dance by playing on a flute. So anyway, the meaning, a hymn of joy for carol, came along in about the 16th century, but it came from the old French word carol.
And I think we probably still use it because it's so pretty.
It is pretty, isn't it? And we even give that name to baby girls. But I have one more thing that I wanted to bring up. You know, we always have turkey at the holiday season. Have you ever wondered why turkey? You know, turkey is a noble bird, and it's a beautiful thing on your Thanksgiving and Christmas table, and it's a sign that we always associate with the founding of our country.
Right,
why do we think of turkey as a derogatory term?
That's a good question. Benjamin Franklin certainly didn't think so. He wanted that to be the national bird.
He did.
So where does that come from?
Well, it all started with American showbiz slang of the 1920s. a turkey was any third-rate production of stage or screen, and by extension, it was later applied to anything that was a flop or a disappointment. Now, it's sort of unknown why the theatrical usage, why they used it pejoratively, but a turkey show in vaudeville days was a touring show, usually burlesque, mounted at a moment's notice and staffed by a third-rate cast, sometimes even amateurs. But it wasn't until the 1950s that the word was first applied to a slow, inept, or worthless person. So calling somebody a turkey was only around since the 50s. And before that, it meant a flop. But it also has positive connotations. You know, to talk turkey is to speak openly or pleasantly. And Thanksgiving has been called Turkey Day since sometime in the 19th century.
I think we have time for one more call, and Dave is on the line. Hello, Dave.
Hi, I'm going to need my both hands soon, but the TH diphthong, which looked like a Y, mm-hmm. As in Ultima Thule, would be uh-huh. pronounced, would be spelled Y-U-L-E with the scribes thing.
Right.
So is the Yuletide actually the Thule-tide? Please address that.
Yeah, actually, that's not the case, though. The letter you're talking about, that looks like a Y but stands for a T-H, is called I had it on the tip of my tongue. It's an old English letter, and when we say ye old, it was actually, it looks like ye, but it was pronounced thee, because it was the English letter for T-H. A yog, that's what it's called, a yog, Y-O-G-H. And it was pronounced T-H, but it was looked like a Y.
Okay, so there's not a connection between...
No, there isn't a connection. Sorry.
That's a great theory, though, Dave.
Yeah, but because Yule comes from, you know, Old Norse, way before there was even Old English, so before the yog, the invention of the yog.
Well, that I think that was good sleuthing, even if it didn't turn out to be right.
Yeah.
Well, Patricia, thank you so much for your time today.
Well, thank you for having me on.
And happy holidays.
Same to you.
Patricia O'Connor is our word maven. She comes on the show once a month or so to talk about the English language. You can find her daily musings on the website grammarphobia.com. Talk of Iowa is produced by Dennis Reese, Catherine Perkins, and our executive producer is Jeff Schmidt. Production assistance today from Lindsay Moon. Podcasting and on-demand audio of Talk of Iowa are available at iowapublicradio.org. Alex Hoyer is very proud of the fact that he found this reggae version of Auld Lang Syne for us today, so he deserves credit for that. You're welcome to send us email anytime. Your suggestions for what you'd like to hear on the show, your comments, your questions. The email address is talkofiowa@iowapublicradio.org. I'm Charity Nebbe. Coming up tomorrow on the program, we'll find out about Mr. Iowa country music, and we'll talk with musician Pieta Brown. Talk of Iowa is a production of Iowa Public Radio News.